being different, it's what makes us unique. It's what makes me, me, and, well, you, you.
You're listening to the Storytellers Project podcast, where real people from Palm Springs to Nashville, from Tallahassee to Detroit, tell true stories about the time their lives changed. And they learn something worth sharing with you. Some stories are funny, some are harrowing. All are coached by journalists from the USA Today Network and told live. It's storytelling and journalism coming together so we can all get a little closer, whether we live across town or across the country. I'm Megan Finnerty. Today's episode is about food, from an absurd moment involving chocolate and shame in the office, to a young woman's relationship to food and her family, and lastly, a Native American woman's take on Thanksgiving. Our first story is from Kathy Cano Murillo of Phoenix.
I worked at the Arizona Republic for 13 glorious years. I loved it there. And this was in the first quarter of that when I was a news clerk. So one day as a news clerk, I had just got done filing all the movie files, inputting the travel airfares, and I'm eating this delicious brownie that I had got on break, and I shared it with the kids writer next to me, and we were savoring that brownie. We had a moment together over that brownie, and she says, you know, we have a secret chocolate club in our department. I'm going to put your name in to be one of the members. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like a secret club. So I was like, I definitely, yes, count me in. Okay, so fast forward to a couple months later, and I've now moved on from filing movie files to helping the TV lady. Now, the TV lady, she was in charge of putting out the TV book every Sunday and dozens of TV grids. And she was very militant in her style of training. You could not make one error, because if you make one error, she would get a flood of phone calls coming in, letting her know about the error, whether if it was spelling or the wrong time, God forbid, the wrong time zone for a TV grid, the whole world would fall apart, right? So she was going on vacation to Hawaii, and I was left in charge to take over her job for the week. And it is so stressful because you had to, she had like three Macs. We had to like use the fax to phone in. Like it was just the NASA command central for TV grids. And it was so stressful. And one day I just started looking through her drawers. I don't know why I was looking through her drawers actually, but in one of her drawers, way in the back, were all of these bags of chocolate. And I thought, well, God bless. The universe always provides. Like, it knows that chocolate helps soothe me and calm me. Chocolate is always a win. So I would work on the grid, and I keep working. Every time, yay, I did that right. I get another chocolate, eat it. It was a grand week. So all the TV grids were sent in. The TV book was done. Thursday comes around, and I am feeling so great, and the garden reporter comes over, and he's like, hey, Kathy, and I'm like, hi, and he's never spoken to me before, except in passing. I was like the lowly news clerk, and he said, so, it's time for the chocolate club, and I'm like, what a great week this is. It's the chocolate, and I go, I'm ready for that. Yay, it went through, and I got up to go with him, and he said, oh, well, actually, Bonnie is the keeper of the chocolate club's chocolate. And I said, oh. And he said, I think she keeps it in one of those drawers over there, like tucked in the back. We all like buy an expensive bag of chocolate, and she's so strict with everything. She's the perfect person to hold on to it so we don't cheat. And I said, oh, yeah, good idea. Bonnie is so good at being strict. So I go, okay, now what drawer is it again? And he's like, that one. I'm like, this one? And I know it's empty because I freaking ate it all in the past 3 days. And so I pull the drawer open, and I see it empty. There's maybe one little Hershey golden nugget, which, you know, wasn't worth pulling out of the, for him. And I just closed it, and I looked at him, and I said, you know what? I'm covering for Bonnie, and it's so stressful. And I saw the chocolate, and his face just, like, went from a smile. And I said, and I think I ate all the chocolate. I think I ate. And he goes, you ate all the chocolate club's chocolate? And I'm like, I think I may have. I'm not sure, but it was just so stressful. I will go tonight and I will replace all of it and I'll be back tomorrow and I'll pass it out. I'm so sorry, please. I am so sorry. And he goes, you know what? It's okay. Let me go talk to some people and, you know, we'll figure some. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. And I'm like, okay, bye. And I'm like, oh my God, I ate all their chocolate. Like, how many people were in that group? And then not too long later, he came back and I'm like, hi, yes. And I already figured out I will take money from our car payment and use that to go buy the chocolate. It will be Godiva and I'll bake brownies. I'll do everything to win back their good graces. And he says, you know, you don't have to worry about bringing any chocolate tomorrow. Like, we totally understand. It's cool. It's cool. I'm like, are you sure? I still want to. And he goes, yeah, but we kind of talked and we thought maybe it wouldn't be a good idea if you were in our chocolate club. And I go, oh, I don't blame you. I would not want me in my chocolate club. And I wouldn't want someone like me. I go, I totally understand. Don't worry about it. Love you. I'll just get back to the TV thing. Bonnie will be back on Monday. No big deal. He's like, okay. And he walks in. I'm like, bye. And then I call my husband. Oh, my God. I just got kicked out of the chocolate club at work. And my husband is like, what? And I go, the chocolate club. It was a secret club, and I thought I was getting invited, and I accidentally ate all their chocolate, and now I got kicked out before I even knew I was in the club, and I wanted to get promoted at my job. And he's like, Gabby. And he goes, number one, you are there to work. This is your job. Your job involves, it does not rely on buttering up the secret chocolate club. It relies on being a good employee and doing good quality work. Focus on the end thing so you can get home today. Get through the day and come home and it will be better. Because I was a mess. Like, I went in the bathroom and full on ugly cry. So I got home. And I walk in, and my husband's there with our two little kids at the time. Now they're grown up. And they had a bag of chocolate. And they said, you are always a longstanding member in our chocolate club.
That was Kathy Canamarillo of Phoenix, helping us remember the importance of having chocolate, having perspective, and having perspective on chocolate. Our second story comes from Lynn Ta of Des Moines.
Off Northwest 86th Street in Clive lied an unassuming Vietnamese restaurant called Saigon Cafe. The restaurant, owned by Vietnamese refugees in the 90s, was home to the heartiest, warmest pho you ever tasted. It was also home to me and my childhood. My early years consisted of running around the restaurant during lunchtimes. My friends were the customers that came in. My play space was behind the counter. Before the waiters had a chance to clear off the tables, I would go by and sneak little bites of leftover food, one time making the grave mistake of mixing in sriracha and hot mustard. I would peel carrots in the kitchen with my father, and I would doodle on the back of Zodiac placemats. This was my childhood. But when I started going to Jordan Creek Elementary in West Des Moines, I quickly learned that my childhood wasn't like others. And of course, I learned that lesson in the lunchroom. One day in the lunchroom, I was sitting there with my classmates, chatting it up, first grade style. The all-important question came up. What is your favorite food? Well, everyone shared hamburgers and pizza and, of course, McDonald's infamous fries. I shared my love of my parents' pho and my favorite topping at the time, squid. There was a resounding ew at the table. Kids told me I should like better foods, like ham and cheese sandwiches or macaroni. As I tried to share more foods that I love from my parents' restaurants, the ewes just grew louder until I just stopped talking. In that moment, insulting the food I loved was more than just that. It was an insult to me, my parents' livelihood, everything that I knew. I became embarrassed by my parents' restaurant, and eventually, more experiences like that led me to becoming embarrassed about being Vietnamese. What I first learned to love not only slowly turned to hate, but a hatred of myself. In the fourth grade, while I was walking through the hallways with my best friend, I just suddenly started crying. She asked, "What's wrong?" And I told her, "There was nothing more that I wanted to be than white and blonde. Suddenly, it was my 12th birthday. I had an awesome party planned at the Family Fun Center where there were arcades and laser tag, but my parents just had one request. Could we do food and cake at the restaurant instead of there?" I tried to change their minds, but they were set. After all, it just made sense. Why would we pay for pizza when we have a whole restaurant there? I begrudgingly agreed, and so the party was set. The first dish that was brought out was egg drop soup, my absolute favorite. My dad liked to put little bits of corn in there and just gave it the sweet taste that other restaurants didn't have. Across from me, my friend was suspiciously lifting and dropping the egg in her soup, not bringing it to her lips. She turned to me and asked, "Is this toilet paper?" I kept it in and told her no. She didn't eat anything despite my parents' best efforts. Later, we went to the Family Fun Center and we had a good time, but that day was my breaking point. I was sick of being different. I was sick of being Asian. I vowed never to bring anybody to my parents' restaurant again. And that's just what I did. When they later sold Saigon Cafe, I was heartbroken, but I didn't tell anybody. Later, when they bought a Chinese restaurant in Grimes when I was in high school, I chose to work at Chick-fil-A instead. But then, for the first time in my childhood and since being in the public school system, I met another Vietnamese girl, same age, same grade. She had actually eaten at my parents' restaurant and told me about slurping pho there on the weekends with her siblings. She introduced me to another Chinese friend who introduced me to another friend. To be honest, living in West Des Moines, I was mostly surrounded by white people. But suddenly, I had a group of people who understood me. We had a name for ourselves, the Asian Mafia. I started to learn not only to like myself, but love myself. I learned to open up about my culture and my heritage. I learned that my teachers had eaten at my restaurant. I learned that even the West Des Moines mayor had eaten there. And I learned that even my non-Asian classmates enjoyed having their weekly fried rice and egg rolls there. It's embarrassing to think now just how embarrassed I was about being different, because being different, it's what makes us unique. It's what makes me, me, and, well, you, you. The people who owned the restaurant recently sold it. The Wendy's next door is no longer there, and the Ryan's across the street has recently vacated, which is just a shame because they had a great buffet. I drove by there the other day. The restaurant is now called Nacho Tequilas. It's a Mexican restaurant that I assume specializes in nachos and tequila. To be honest, when I first drove by there, I was pretty devastated. Even though it had been years since I had been there, in my mind, it became this structure that would be there forever. But it's my family, it's the food, and it's the people that I will take with me forever. It's not the structure. And now, I have a new margarita place. Thank you.
That was Linta of Des Moines, with insight into the idea that our self-identity often starts with our families, but it can really be our friends who help us truly realize who we are, even if it's just the same person our family raised in the first place. Our last story is from Felicia Cocodzin Ruiz of Phoenix.
My first Thanksgiving that I remember, I was in second grade. It was here in Phoenix, in the north side, and I had a teacher named Mrs. Hustle. She took me aside one day and she said, "I'm really happy that you're in my class this year, because it's the first time I will have a Native American play the role of Little White Dove in our Thanksgiving play." I was so excited. So I went home and I told my mom, "Guess what? I'm gonna be in a play. And I'm gonna be a Native American." My mom said, "Mija, you are Native American." I said, "Oh, okay. I mean, I'm gonna be Little White Dove. I'm gonna be Little White Dove." And my teacher said that everyone else has to make their outfits, but she's going to make mine. And right then, I knew my mom was suspicious. We rehearsed our songs, we went over our lines, everyone was making their little collars and their little buckles, and my teacher had me put together a cardboard canoe, because apparently people like me who grew up in the desert, that's what we did. So I put together this little cardboard canoe, and the night came, it was time for this play, you know? So my mom, she did my hair really pretty. I had hair way down to here, past my butt. And she made it real shiny, these two long braids, and she put these leather tassels in my hair with like beads in them. And I looked really pretty and I felt so proud. We get to the school, my parents go sit behind, you know, in the where you guys are, and I'm behind the curtain. And everyone's getting ready. They're all getting in their little black and white penguin outfits, and I'm just waiting for my teacher because she has this real special outfit for me. And she brings it out. It's a manila file folder stapled together with a flower and a droopy feather. And it had some scribbles on it, and she put it on my head. Then she takes out my dress, and it's a pillowcase. It had a hole cut out for the top and two holes for my arms. And she put it on me, and it looked like she had taken like the scissors on the bottom, so it was like really tattered looking. And she had put all these weird scribbles on there that meant nothing to me or to my family. And everyone started laughing at me. And I could see why. I looked like I was like a homeless person. It was see-through. I started crying. And I said, I don't want to go on the play. I don't want to go on the stage. I don't want to be on the in Little White Dove. And my teacher, Mrs. Hustle, she said, you're going up on that stage. So I got in my little cardboard canoe, and everybody's ready to sing their songs, and we're getting into the play, and the curtain's open. And I look out, and I see my mom, and she looks so sad, and I didn't feel proud. Flash forward. My daughter, she comes home with a piece of paper. Mom, guess what? We're having a Thanksgiving celebration. Let me see that piece of paper. So I look at this piece of paper and it says, we are going to be having an event called Colonial Days. And I thought, huh. I said, man, this takes me right back to being in second grade dressed in a pillowcase. And I said, I don't want this for you. I said, I have beautiful things you can wear for this day. I said, let's call your teacher or email your teacher. Let's, you know, let them know our plan. So I email the teacher and I say, as an indigenous person, I don't feel comfortable with my daughter dressing like a colonist for this colonial day. I have beautiful things my daughter can wear that will represent us. And I said, okay, let's wait and see what he says. Next day we get this email and it says, first, your daughter can wear a costume if she wants. And I thought, well, we don't even wear costumes. We're just wearing clothes. Then it says that he feels that colonization happened a long time ago, and that I was being overly sensitive, and that I needed to get over it. So I was so angry, and I was so mad, because I wanted my daughter to represent me, and yet we were expected to dress like the colonists. And his email went on to say that the children weren't dressing like colonists, they were dressing like pilgrims. But I thought, well, pilgrims were colonists, they were separatists. You know, so I said to my daughter, you're getting older now. I want you to start making some decisions, but I don't want you to have the experience that I had, you know, so think about it. Go to your school and talk to some of the other kids. She comes back the next day and she says, Mom, I talked to one of the girls in my school and their family's Navajo and their mom doesn't want them dressing, you know, like colonists either. And I said, okay, well, what did you decide? She said, I'm too scared to go dressed in your clothes. Everybody's gonna make fun of me. And she was right. And I felt sorry for her because I didn't want her to have that experience, the same experience that I had. I said, okay, go ahead and choose what you want to wear for the colonial days. And so she got her little outfit together and the event came up and we go to the school and it's outside and there's little children tending their little native garden and there's children making little native foods and there's children making native baskets and there's children singing native songs. But there are no natives in the group there. None. And so I get this piece of paper and it's like a pamphlet and it talks about all the volunteers that had been there at the Colonial Day celebration. And it's thanking the volunteers for helping. Thank you to Safeway, whoever volunteered things or donated things. And on the very back, it has a beautiful quote and it was talking about thankfulness, gratitude, peace. And then it says Mahatma Gandhi. And I stood there in the middle of that school and I said, man, you guys can't even get your Indians right. And the crazy thing is, this school was called Hopi, and that's what my family is. A couple years ago, I decided to have a decolonized Thanksgiving celebration at my house. I had sunflower cakes and different kinds of squash and all kinds of berries and things. It was a little dinner, but it was like so much food, and I had my friends invite their friends. Everyone was really excited. They had never experienced anything like this before. And I was really proud. But there was this one person there, and man, they could not wrap their head around the fact that we did not have sweet potatoes with marshmallows and biscuits and stuffing and all these things that were traditional Thanksgiving dinner celebration things. And he says to me, I feel like I've been duped. I would never have come to this Thanksgiving if I had known that this is what it was going to be like. And I felt insulted, but at the same time, I thought, okay, Felicia, this is your time to educate this person and talk about the different native foods. And I, this is what we're having. This is pre-contact food. And he just said, man, you are just un-American. And I was like, how am I un-American if I've been here before you guys? So then he goes on to say that I'm not patriotic and that I had ruined his Thanksgiving, and his friend was embarrassed, and it was just a really awkward moment, and he wasn't listening. He couldn't hear what I was trying to say. He couldn't hear what I was trying to do. These words came to my mind, and I thought they were words I had heard before, and I said to him, colonization happened a long time ago. I believe you're being overly sensitive, and you need to get over it.
That was Felicia Cocodzin Ruiz of Phoenix, who uses such great humor to address racism, parenting, difficult holiday moments, and indigenous foods, all in one story. There's a lot there. Thanks, Felicia. All of today's stories are really about food, right? Chocolate, pho, Thanksgiving dinner. And they can be about our relationships with people, from coworkers to families to whole communities. They also talk to this idea that all these women were really fundamentally resilient, from getting over a humiliation at the office to renegotiating an idea of self, and lastly, to overcoming colonialism by figuring out her own Thanksgiving dinner. Thanks for listening to Strangers Talk About Their Feelings at the Storytellers Project podcast, and our thanks to all of our storytellers and the USA Today Network journalists who worked with them. If you live near Phoenix, you can check us out talking about life and death on August 22nd at the Crescent Ballroom. Or if you live near Des Moines, come see us for stories about champions and underdogs August 24th at Woolies. If you know someone who tells the best stories over brunch, give them my number or share this podcast with them and let them know that you can't wait to hear how this inspires them. Thanks again. We'll be back next week with an episode about self-actualization that won't get too weird. For more, visit us at storytellersproject.com or on Facebook at The Storytellers Project.